Please stand by. Good day, and welcome to today's NTRA Communications National Media Teleconference presents the Pegasus World Cup Invitational. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to hand the presentation over to Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Vicki, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We're here to preview two events, really, the Eclipse Awards on Thursday evening and then the Pegasus World Cup on Saturday. The star of both shows, of course, is Gunrunner. He's the favorite to win Horse of the Year and champion Older Dirt Horse on Thursday, and he'll be installed as the morning line favorite for the world's richest race when entries are drawn Wednesday. Later on, we're going to talk to Gulfstream Park President Tim Ritvo, plus trainer Dallas Stewart and Hall of Fame rider Mike Smith. But first, most appropriately, we're delighted to be joined by Gunrunner's Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen. Steve, it's Jim Mulvihill here. Thanks for being on the call.
Glad to be here.
Gunrunner got his final time work this morning, not just his final work for the Pegasus, but the final one of his career. Easy half in 49. I would guess you've seen the video and talked to Scott by now. What can you tell us about that work and how you feel about him?
Well, obviously everybody's very happy with how he's coming into the Pegasus. It's a little, obviously with this being his last race, there's a lot of emotions from the whole team.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? I know, anytime you've got a standout horse like this that is running its last race, you get a little sad about seeing him leave the barn, but he also has the chance to go out on this very high note. So, in the final days around the barn, what's it like when you're
well, getting ready to say goodbye? I think it's a very personal thing. It's a very, very personable thing for me and as well as everybody else involved, and it's just impossible to put into words, tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, we want to talk about the Eclipse Awards in addition to the Pegasus. So, being an overwhelming favorite to win Horse of the Year on Thursday, I just wanted to ask what qualities of his campaign most impressed you this year? What is it specifically that makes him a Horse of the Year?
How he stepped up, when called upon, and met the challenge, and got it done. He is truly a special horse, mentally and physically, and we've been on a tremendous run with him, and just to appreciate being in his presence.
Absolutely, and I'm curious about the decision to go to the Pegasus. I mean, if you had called it a career for Gunrunner after the Breeders' Cup, with a stallion career ahead of him, nobody would have blinked at that. But what made this race a must-do for you and Ron and David Fisk?
Well, I think that we all feel a little somewhat loss over the lack of an opportunity to run him in it last year. And hopefully this is it puts us in a position to correct that.
Very good. Well, Steve, I'm going to check with the media, and we'll see what questions they have for you. Vicki?
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll go first to Ron Flatter with VSIN.
Steve, how badly do you want the lead for Gunrunner early in this race?
We've had a lot of success letting Gunrunner decide where he wanted to be, and we continue to do that. We plan on doing that.
Is that a must do? I mean, what will your conversation with Flo be in that regard?
Anything but what you just said.
And do you have a plan B, or do you need a plan B in case you draw outside?
We've got one plan, and that's to run Gunrunner. It's we focus on what we have control over and feel good about that, and that's all we can concern ourselves with at this point.
Okay. And finally, I mean, can you compare this race to any other where you've seen so much speed that he's had to face?
As Thursday, hopefully, and expectedly, he'll be named Horse of the Year. And I think that covers quite a bit of questions. So, you know, we're very pleased with his preparation going into the Pegasus. Obviously, the post position draw will dictate where a lot of horses are early in the race, and then how they are able to use that or overcome it, however it may be, is yet to be seen.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Steve, how you doing?
Very well.
Hey, the run that he's been on since the Clark, can you compare that to the run Curlin went on when Curlin won like 7 of 8? Or is there any comparison, different horses, different times? It's been pretty incredible, wouldn't you agree?
It definitely feels like it's been incredible. The similarities between Curlin and Gunrunner is the uniqueness of each of them, and the fact that how in control of the situation they always seem to be. And, I appreciate that about both of the horses.
Whenever you think about the grand scheme of it all, has it been a little bit overwhelming to have a horse that's had this kind of scheme? I mean, you've been there before. You won a few races. But when you think about what's happened, is it kind of a pinch yourself and, hey, am I asleep or awake or dreaming or whatever?
I think just to be in his presence, to be around him, to have the privilege to train him as well as run him, it's a dream come true. Everybody's well aware of my background. I grew up in a racing family, and this is what I dreamed of being a part of, and I realized how blessed I am to be in this position. And I think that the appreciation is the kind of the key to it for me. You know, I think it's the most obvious and what I feel the most.
Appreciate your time, Steve. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
We'll go next to Tim Reynolds with Associated Press.
Hey, Steve. I'm curious, when you first heard, I guess it was 18 months or 24 months ago or whatever, the first notions of this race started getting out, did you think this was, number one, something that would work, and number two, I mean, with the concerts and the red carpets and the enormous purse and all that, is how good of a thing is this for racing, do you think, in a broad sense?
Well, I wasn't able to participate in it last year. Obviously, we're very excited about it this year. That probably makes me a little more anxious because not running in it last year when we had kind of planned on it. So, I feel that horses at this level, the Breeders' Cup, Dubai World Cup, the Triple Crown races, it doesn't get any more exciting than that for me. It's just, I mentioned earlier, just growing up in a racing family, this is what I've dreamed about my whole life, and I just appreciate the opportunity that we've been given. And, Saturday is, definitely very exciting for me.
Thank you. Safe travels down here, Steve.
Thank you.
Again, press *1 to ask a question. And we'll go next to John Pritchie with Horse Race Insider.
Good afternoon, Steve. A couple of things. In reading your quotes all year, I don't know, I guess this columnist didn't read words into it, we'd have nothing to write about. But it seems to me that you don't think that maybe a lot of people are giving Gunrunner the kind of respect that certainly you give him, and the kind of respect, more importantly, that he deserves. And part two, you said before that one of the things that endears you to him has been his ability to step up. Well, does he have to step up again on Saturday to win this race? And then, you know, and also, is he getting more respect in the overall?
Well, he has to step up. It's unique for this caliber of race to be in January. We definitely had targeted peaking at the Breeders' Cup Classic when we brought him back in training. So that is a bit unique, and he does need to step up from it. And I think that he is exactly right now with his victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic thought of and spoke of the way that I had hoped for. And reading into it or not, as far as the horse not being respected for who he was, he does have a pretty good form, and I think a horse of his talent level, I'm pretty sure that he wasn't the favorite until the seventh start of his career, which is, you know, kind of odd, or an indication of they didn't like him as well as somebody else in the race.
Right. Could that also be a part and parcel to the fact that he was late developing in terms of the three-year-old picture? I mean, you know, he was terrific on the early trail yet last year and through the Triple Crown, but quite obviously Gunrunner has raised his game, I guess, starting last fall and through this year.
Right, yes. Yes, he went from a very good horse, too, you know, as we're all hoping and expecting for him to be named the Horse of the Year on Thursday, you know, on Thursday night at the Eclipse.
Well, I hope you have a safe trip on Saturday, Steve.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We'll go next to Larry Stooms with San Francisco Chronicle.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Very good.
All right, Steve, have you ever had a horse at this quality combining speed plus evidently stamina and a power of finishing power, speed and finishing power?
His Breeders' Cup Classic under the circumstances, the way the racetrack was playing, was probably my strongest run to date. By any horse, and it was the circumstances that brought that out, and he stepped up to it, and as you expect of my reaction, I couldn't have been prouder of him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll go next to Hal Habib with Palm Beach Post.
Hi, Steve. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the irony of his last race being here at Gulfstream, given what happened last year. Can you remember about your emotions as that whole thing played out? And what, if anything, do you wish that maybe you had done differently? Or I'm sure I can guess what you wish the track had done differently.
Well, it was a unique situation with the quarantine in Louisiana and dealing with racetracks as well as states. It's I think the unsureness of it is, you know, out of your hands. But what we felt like last year before the Pegasus was that we were going to have a very good year with him, whether we got to run or not, and to not lose sight of that and to stay the course. And I think that we will be rewarded for doing that with, hopefully, the Horse of the Year Eclipse on Thursday night.
And if you should win on Saturday, I'm sure winning $7 million takes care of itself, but will it be all the more sweeter given what occurred last year?
I very much want Gunrunner to go out the way that we feel that he deserves, and that would be on top and heralded like he has been since the Breeders' Cup Classic.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
have no further questions at this time.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for your time. We'll look forward to seeing you Thursday night at the Eclipse Awards.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Steve Asmussen, trainer of Gunrunner, with some very interesting comments, including that the Breeders' Cup Classic by Gunrunner was probably his strongest run to date, and that's quite a statement when you consider Curlin and Rachel Alexandra and a number of other grade one winners and top runners that have come from that barn over the years. In any case, the Eclipse Awards are set for Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. That'll be live on TVG, available in more than 45 million homes nationwide. There's also a preview show on TV and a separate red carpet preview on Facebook Live that'll be hosted by Gulfstream Park's Acacia Courtney starting at 7 p.m. On Saturday, the Pegasus will air live on network television NBC from 4:30 to 6 p.m. That's Eastern Time, and our friends at Horse Racing Radio will also have live coverage from 4 to 6 p.m. on SiriusXM and online at horseracingradio.net. And as always, we'd appreciate it if you could work that coverage in, or work those details of the broadcast coverage into your stories, just so fans know where to find us. With that, we'd like to welcome in our next guest, and that is the Stronach Group's Chief Operating Officer, Tim Ritvo. The Pegasus is, of course, the vision of Frank Stronach, but Tim has been largely responsible for realizing that vision the past few years. Tim, it's Jim Mulvihill from the NCRA. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. You know, you're 5 days out from the Pegasus, so I'd just kind of like to turn it over to you for some thoughts about both the field that you've assembled and the preparations for the fan experience and everything that goes along with the race.
Yeah, it's a combination. You know, it's a combination of two great minds, right, Belinda and Mr. Stronach. One is from the racing perspective of how do you keep the older horses racing and competing at the highest level, and obviously $16 million purse helps. Because the intent was to always try to give these horses another opportunity and maybe even another reason to stay racing for another year, you know, with a $16 million purse here, the $7 million Breeders' Cup Classic, the Dubai World Cup. That's always been Frank's thought, is how do we get these great horses to compete at the highest level? And, you know, the one thing in racing that's happened through the years is people had a tendency until the big dance to avoid each other. This race that we've assembled here is an exceptional race of all the greatest talent in North America and some in Europe. We're still not completely satisfied until we get some Asian horses, but we're getting there. And for the second year, this race is spectacular. And then from the entertainment component size, you know, Belinda Stronach and her team continues to grow awareness in Miami and in the nation about the entertainment component of it, how we can make horse racing exciting to the average customer, the customers that's not accustomed to knowing everything about the horses, but will come out to a really special event.
Tim, you just laid out perfectly what makes this race so significant. And yet it still seems to be a lightning rod for various criticisms and online chatter and you know, between a $16 million purse that doesn't come out of the purse account, being on national television, giving these horses a reason to keep racing and not retire at the end of the year. Do you ever just look at this situation and ask, like, what more can we do? What more do people expect of us?
It's a great question, and it frustrates me sometimes when I do talk to some of the reporters within the industry and say, listen, you know, we are far from perfect, but we are innovative. We are trying to do new things, try to bring new heights. The first couple of years, like any startup business, we'll make no money. You know, even with the prior mutual handle expected to exceed $40 million, even with the, you know, the facility itself, it's a little bit smaller than the standard racetrack that has, you know, 40 or 50,000 seats, which is not available at Gulfstream. Even with all of that, you know, the industry, they really, you know, the Stronach family, They owe some gratitude to the family for being innovative, for coming up with these kind of concepts and ideas that we evolve over time and get better and better. But the idea that we can get the top five Breeders' Cup horse finishers, 1, 2, 3, 1 through 5, the Stella Wynn, some of these other Breeders' Cup winners, a horse all from Europe that was second in the Breeders' Cup Classic race, and we can get them all assembled in one race in the second year, is truly in a tribute to the family's commitment to the sport. So, yeah, as it is frustrating, and sometimes I've brought those points up, you know, everybody finds the negative in everything, and obviously anytime you start up something like this, it takes time to evolve. You know, we're proud of what we've accomplished in the second year. You know, for somebody that's ran Preaknesses, that's had 140 years of history, it's kind of like a well-oiled machine. This, to start up something like this at this level and have the success we've had after 2 years is a real compliment to the staff and the crew and the commitment of not just the Stronach group, but everybody that works for us.
Very good. Well, we can't wait for Saturday. I'm going to check with the media now and see what questions they've got. Vicki, the operator, you want to see what questions we have sitting out there?
Yes, again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll go to our first question, Tom Jitcha with Sun Centennial of South Florida.
Hi, Tim. The first year you had the 12 commitments back in May. This year it's been a little tougher assembling them. Have you had discussions on what you can do in the future to resolve that issue?
Well, I think actually this year, Tom, great question, is going to be a turning point. Right, the first year no one really knew what to expect, and they jumped right in and wasn't sure how the revenue splits were going to work and everything else. And after that, this year was a little bit tougher. We got 9 participants by the due date, December 15th, and we had 3 available spots that the Stronach group bought. It was really probably one of the smartest moves we made, and I can tell you why as I touch on it. Right away, immediately, people had come to us to see if they could buy the remaining 3 spots after the deadline. We said, no, the deadline has passed, and the people that decide to run in the race after the deadline, in our opinion, would not get as good a deal as the guys that, the 9 guys that joined up. Now, and I did talk to Mr. West, and I've talked to some of the other shareholders, Dean Reeves, Mr. Gallo, and they were very pleased to hear what we were going to do. So what we ended up doing is anybody of the last 3 spots that we're going to run could not buy a spot. They would have to contribute 50% of their earnings back to the 9 original shareholders. So once that was formatted, we think that's maybe a turning point that people are talking about. How do they get in next year? How do they assure their spot? So, you know, as these things evolve, and this just kind of came to play right at the last minute when we only had 9 spots, we said, you know what, we need to buy up these last 3 spots. Make sure that the people that decide to run in these 3 spots, regardless of how good their horse is, were only committed to a certain part of that deal, so that the people that did buy in have a better advantage to keep all of their money that they earned. I hope that helps. I know it's a little confusing. Yeah,
it is a little confusing. I just want to clarify that. So if someone wins the 7 of the last 3 wins the $7 million prize, $3.5 million will go back to the original 9?
Minus the entry fee, in other words, the Stronach group will claw back the first $1 million, right? So if somebody, one of the 3, the final 3 came in, they get 50% minus the entry fee. So the bottom line is $1 million would come out, and it'd be $3 million left over for them, and $3 million would go to the other 9 participants.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, you're welcome.
And we'll go next to Ron Flatter with VSIN.
Tim, the suggestion's been made even from the outset that because of the outside bias against races over a mile at Gulfstream, that this race needs to be lengthened. John Preachy's mentioned a mile and 3/16. It's been said that maybe a mile and a quarter would be optimal. How much discussion has been paid to that?
A lot, yeah, and that's one of our biggest issues. Obviously, We struggled to try to figure the balance. The reason the original mile and an eighth was selected was to try to get horses that were even good dirt milers, that they would probably stretch to a mile and an eighth for that kind of money. But we're seeing that picking up a dirt miler is definitely not as valuable, let's say, as the people complaining about getting 10, 11, and 12. You know, we still, you know, struggle with that and trying to figure out what the solution is. But the compromise could be a mile and a 3/16 and backing it up a little bit, or even a mile and a quarter. But then it's kind of become a true classic distance race where you wouldn't be able to get a miler over, you know, a mile and a quarter. So that's been one of the issues that we think in the years to come, maybe next year, the distance definitely has to be looked at. But it's something you can't change, you know, leading up to a couple of weeks before the race, because it's not fair. It has to be pretty consistent. When people bought in, this was the distance, and they knew. And, you know, yes, as tough as it is to win from out there, you know, we just don't know who's going to draw that. As the draw is always very fair, and you know, everyone has as good a chance to get an inside post as someone else.
It would be easy to say the solution, and the easiest solution, considering your higher profile across the country, would be to move this to Santa Anita. So how much discussion has been given to that?
There's been some discussion. Internally, it bounces back and forth. Talking to Belinda a few days ago, she just seems really she's starting to really feel that this speed is becoming a big Miami event. And she's, you know, we're still going to have a bunch of discussions leading up to it the next couple of days, and then obviously after it, and we'll make a decision. It makes all the business sense in the world to move it to Santa Anita from trying to sell tickets and everything else. But at the same time, she's really thinking that we're making an iconic event in Miami that needs to stay, and especially with the statue. And then we could talk about creating another event for Santa Anita, similar to something that we have here. So anyways, those are the discussions that we're having. So all of those kind of tie together, right? The distance of the race, the ability to sell 40 to 50,000 tickets, and, you know, in the future of where the event is held. So all of those discussions will take place a lot before the race and a few days after the race, and then I'm pretty sure she'll come up with an announcement.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Hal Habib with Palm Beach Post.
Hi, Tim. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what happened last year as well with Gunrunner. Looking back, do you feel that the track did what it had to do, or knowing what you know now about what Gunrunner has done, do you wish that anything had turned out differently?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the last thing we wanted to do was keep a horse of his caliber out of the race. There was a lot of pressure from not just the facility, but lots of other participants in the race, but also other stables that were concerned about the widespreadness of this. And we went down there and we did a lot of investigating. We sent our own medical director down there. And obviously, Steve Asmussen and his crew are at the highest level of care for their horse. And that was not an issue, but we were still concerned a little bit of the protocols that were put in place and why that spread as fast as it did and took as much time to get under wraps as it did. So there were some fundamental issues that bothered us. Obviously, we understand the Gunrunner team not wanting to do the swab because they do throw some negative tests sometimes. And the blood work was not good enough for our medical director, and our medical team decided that the swab had to be done to prevent any any worse scenario. So yeah, so when you look back, obviously, regardless of what he's done this year and the greatest horse as he is, we would have loved to have him last year. Would have helped with the parameter handle. Would have, he's a great, great horse. Now he's even a better horse than then. And we're just thrilled to have him this year. And we're real sorry. I know there was there was a lot of anxious times and a lot of back and forth rhetoric. But the bottom line is we had to play on the side of caution for all the other valuable horses that were here. So it was a really, really, really tough decision, and anybody says it wasn't. But we, in the end, we were just as much a loser as the Gunrunner team was, but not be able to bring the horse because we would have done better from a parametric perspective, we believe, but it was just too much of a risk to bring him in with everything that was going on down there.
If I could, I'd like you to put your old trainer's hat on for just a moment. If you were Steve in the position of Swab or no Swab, what call do you think you might have made?
I probably wouldn't have done it if I was Steve, because of the history they have set of false positives. It may have put him out of commission much longer, right? And so, you know, he would have had to give up the one race. But then he would be fine the rest of the season. If he had done the swab, I don't know if it had come back positive, what would have happened. Listen, you know, it's a year ago, and I'd have to put myself in his place and his time. But, I said, I don't blame them for not doing the swab, and I wanted them not to blame us for not allowing the horse on the property, right? I just think each person did exactly what they thought was in the best interest of one, their business, or the condition of their horse. So, you know, I'm not saying that I would have done anything that they did different, and I hope that they would have looked at it from our position and said we did what we had to do.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate your candor, and hopefully it turns out for the best for everybody on Saturday.
Yeah, I hope for a great day. Thank you very much.
And we'll go next to Frank Angst with Blood Horse.
Hey, Tim. First of all, thanks for outlining how those Stronach Group spots would work if one of them places. Could you just outline the purse payouts this year by placing?
You know, I don't have them in front of me, but I think it's obviously it's $7 million to the winner. I'd probably get those to you because there's been some adjustments through the time, but it's 1-8, 1-2. I mean, I can definitely make sure those are made available to the whole entire crew.
That'd be great because, that's good. And how did you guys kind of arrive at them this year? What was that process and what was the reasoning for any team? Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a little – so every – like we said, being the second year – you know, making sure that each participant got back $650,000. So each of the 12 participants receive a minimum of $650,000. So in reality, your only risk is $350,000, which is a lot of money still. But obviously that has to come from somewhere. So there's always been a different line of thoughts. Every time you get 12 people together and trying to agree on something in horse racing, do you weigh and put the $12 million up in the top five and the top six and no one gets anything underneath? Or do you, to try to make a fuller, more competitive field, spread it out a little bit? So those were the issues we had. But as we each year develop, more solid partnerships and more people that want to continue to be in it every year, I think we'll see eventually get to a structure that everybody is exactly comfortable with. Personally, my personal structure didn't get passed, but mine would have been that the top four horses make money, the middle four horses broke even, and the bottom four horses would lose most of their money. You know, and that's kind of in my head. That's kind of how I always saw it, but it didn't get as much traction as I would have liked. But it's a work in progress, and I think everybody was happy with where we set it this year.
And there had been some talk of adding a turf race at some point. Is that still something that's a possibility?
Yes, for sure. There's definitely talk about adding a turf race. The question is, do we run another big event on another day at San Anita if we, let's say, don't move it? Or do we have a big race in Washington, D.C. at the International as a prep towards the Breeders' Cup? So there's definitely talk about adding a turf race, whether it would be on the same day or another whole event. We're not sure yet. Obviously, not only in North America have we seen a huge transformation from dirt racing to turf racing. But, you know, all throughout the world, most of the racing is done on the grass, especially at the higher level. So, yeah, I mean, it only makes sense to throw one in there. But at the same time, you know, guys like Gary West, who we're really happy to be, is really glad to see that we have a classic, another classic race on the dirt, to continue to keep the dirt horses having value and places to run.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
We'll go next to John Pritchie with Horse Race Insider.
Hey, good afternoon, Tim. A couple of questions. Some of the future of Pegasus. First of all, the ban by Oaklawn, that was like a herpes virus related and not a reaction to the bonuses that were being offered to shippers in terms of competition of horses. I just wanted you to verify whether it was bonus related or did you think it was virus related, or what is that story?
Yeah, I think if they're just being cautious, right? I mean, there was a horse that actually was between Laurel and Belmont that came from supposedly New Bolton and then tested positive. So I personally don't consider it an attack at all. I just think they're just being cautious, you know, and I can't see how any racetrack wouldn't want more horses from all over different jurisdictions. So I just think they're being cautious and you know, at this time. That's just mine.
Okay. Now, I have a question. You know, the question of the run-up has come up a lot with turf racing. That's a story for another day. But can you tell me what the normal run-up is for mile and an eighth races on the dirt at Gulfstream? You know, ballpark.
Yeah, it's about 60 feet. So normally the gate is, you know, that's mostly a normal run-up in America, where the gate is set just a little bit off of where the horses break. And
right.
They run up. There has been some talk of backing it up just a little bit more to like 100 feet, where Delmar has, I believe, has had run-ups up to 200 feet. And it would make it better, obviously, for the outside horses. But the one thing for sure I can promise you is that decision will be made before anything is ever drawn. As of right now, it's a 60-foot run-up. And then before we decide to draw the races, there has been some talk of whether we should you know, back that up even a little bit further to give more benefit for the outside horses, but at the same time, not change the distance of the race.
Right. No, I understand that. But even, you know, even if you double that 60 feet, I don't think too many people would object. So the thing is that that's still under discussion. And if you decide, let's say you make a decision that, well, we're going to make the run up 100 feet or 120 feet, you will announce that simultaneously so that all horsemen will know what the deal is, you know, before they get in the starting gate?
That's right. We would tell everybody going in that this is the decision that we made, that the run-up would be 120 feet, let's say. That decision will be made sometime today or tomorrow, and before the draw, so that we're not making a change based on who gets the outside post.
All right. Well, have a great day on Saturday. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Due to time constraints, please limit yourselves to two questions for Mr. Ritvo. And we'll go next to Richard Kickheffer with United Press International.
Hi, Tim. I believe I heard you mention that you were interested in having participation from Asia. And I'm wondering what kind of outreach you've been making in that regard. It seems like your best bet would be to have horses from Japan looking to go to Dubai. But what are the thoughts do you have about that?
Yeah, Mike Rogers, who's our president of Sonic Group, and myself have made trips to Japan and Hong Kong, working with the delegations from their team, you know, to try to one, to show the interest that we have to see what it would take to bring those horses over. You know, all the logistics and the quarantine issues have been discussed multiple times. We've reached out to many of the owners. We've invited some over for the race. So, you know, we've got the first year, we just kind of made the introduction and people watched the race. this year there was actually more serious interest, and it just didn't happen. And I feel really comfortable by next year we will see a horse or two come over here from either Hong Kong or Japan.
And what about South America?
South America, we continue to reach out to them. We think, you know, once we do a grass race, we'll see more interest, right? Some of their better horses are on the grass. We have, tried in the past last year. Mr. McInville brought the Argentinian horse over, and they just, you know, they just haven't been able to compete at that level at this time. But we're continuing to. The idea of making it a World Cup race is you need participation from all over the world. So there is definitely some, work to be done to make that happen. But we won't stop until we get there. And then especially if there is an addition of a grass race, we really think we have to really reach out around the globe.
Thanks very much. Looking forward to Saturday.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Tim Reynolds with Associated Press.
Tim, I'll limit mine to one because of the constraints. Last year, I know a lot of the marketing here in South Florida was built around the uniqueness of this event. And when the group gets together and starts talking about either moving it or having a similar event elsewhere or multiple similar events, how much of a concern is there on the part of the group that it will lose that unique appeal here in Miami if something was to stay at Gulfstream, that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very good question, and what you have to do all the time is recreate yourself, right? And what does it become? How do we make it more exciting? I still think we have lots of things that we could do from a marketing perspective that can really make this race more exciting, or as exciting as it is now and even in the future. But, there's the participation of international horses would be one of the things that would really help us. We just did the Classic Caribbean, which is, it's been held in Latin America for 50 years. Obviously not the quality of racing that this is by any means, but the idea of the participation where eventually with international participation, it kind of becomes, for a better word, almost a soccer game cheering, where people come from different parts of the world and country to try to make cheer for their home team horse and stuff like that. So that's one of the marketing initiatives. But on top of that, Belinda's initiatives are, how do we make horse racing exciting again? How do we bring the best of the best together? And creating these events and getting these kind of level of horses is really tricky. And the only thing to do that moves them is money at this time, right? The people, it's about they're running in this race because there's a $16 million up for grabs and $7 million to the winner. So the idea is to continue to figure out ways to subsidize purses like this. That can't subsidize themselves through power mutual handle because there's not enough bet on them, but at the same time continue to grow the sport so that the United States is 10% of the world's power mutual handle, so there's 90% more out there. So how do we make the world a smaller place? And that's the goals of this international race.
Thanks, Tim. See you Saturday.
Thank you.
And we have no more questions at this time.
All right, Tim, we'll let you get back to work. Sounds like you got a little bit to do this week.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And thanks for all the questions.
All right, there's Tim Riffo of the Stronach Group, never shying away from a tough question from the media, and we appreciate that. Let's get back to the horsemen now. We're going to check in with trainer Dallas Stewart. He's taken a shot in the Pegasus with the Clark Handicap winner Seeking the Soul. And again, just as with Steve, we've got some Eclipse Awards angles to talk about as well. Of course, Forever Unbridled seems the likely champion, older female, so we want to hear about that. Dallas Stewart, are you on?
Yes.
All right. It's Jim Malvahill checking in. Thanks for being with us. Before before we get to the Pegasus, I want to ask about Forever Unbridled. She is the deserving champion, in my opinion, and I expect that she will be on Thursday. But I have seen a handful of voters who have scoffed at a campaign with only 3 starts, so I'm just curious what your response is to that opinion that's floating out there.
Well, she had 3 starts and 3 wins. She not only had 3 starts, she had 3 wins. So, and she had two of grade ones. She beat a champion, and she won a Breeders' Cup race. So any other races would have been insignificant.
Makes sense to me. I mean, we always...
She didn't get started until June because she was coming off of surgery. She also was coming off surgery. So having said all that, it's a big accomplishment.
Agreed. We always want our trainers to manage their horses according to what's best for them, and you did that, and then there are people that wish that there were more starts, but you can't do much better than an unbeaten campaign. But with that, let's talk about Seeking the Soul and a very interesting contender for the Pegasus. I want to ask first just about all the speed lining up for this race and how that might help your cause. Just how do you see this race unfolding?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a great race. You know, there should be some speed in there. Everybody's going to have their horses cranked up, ready to go. And I think we're going to be one of them. And, you know, Seeking the Soul has a tactical type race scenario, and it should work out well for him. And hopefully he'll be the best horse at the wire.
And you had a final breeze yesterday at the fairgrounds. Can you just tell us a little bit about how that went and how you feel he's doing?
Just a nice sharp half. Coming off of a good solid 3-quarter work. So he's been consistent in his works. He always has been, but he's looking great. It's a beautiful hair coat, dapples all over him. He's eating well. So we're going to be excited about getting him down there Wednesday.
Awesome. Well, Dallas, hang on a second, and Vicki, the operator, is going to see what questions the media have for you.
Sure.
Again, press *1 to ask a question. And we'll go first to Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Dallas, how are you today?
Pretty good.
Is this a perfect pig and slop situation for you where, I mean, you've got no pressure, you got a horse that's been really running well lately, and you got a chance to run for $16 million, a piece of that. Well, how about it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of pressure because you got to put up a bunch of money to run, so you better hope you can try to make some back, you know. But, you know, I mean, it's a big race, a lot on the line, you know, a lot of great horses, great race, you know, great jockeys. It's going to be a great race, so you want to be competitive and show up and run hard.
Now, these last 6 races, 3 wins and 3/3, what kind of flipped the switch for him, or is it just maturing? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he's just learning, you know, he's just learned how to win. You know, he went up at Saratoga, it was an allowance win, but it was a good win. And then he came back with an okay race in the Lucas Classic, but he's just put it all together. He's we always thought a lot of him. But maybe just the timing of being a little bit older, and, you know, knock on wood, he's very healthy. So he's just learning how to win. And his last 2 races have been over different racetracks, which I like that. You know, he should be able to take his game down the Gulfstream okay. So that angle works good for me.
Dallas, appreciate it, man. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
We'll go next to Ron Flatter with VSIN.
Dallas, Johnny getting the ride this second time in a row after you'd switched jockeys a few times. How much of that was just because of the availability of jockeys, and how much of that was you just wanting to try something different each time?
I really don't understand the question.
In other words, you had Flo, and then you had Brian. Now you got Johnny. What went into the whole reason for changing jocks each of those times?
Just one of those things, you know. Brian rode him great. Johnny won Johnny won the Breeders' Cup for us and won Mr. Kipke and felt a nice little mojo going there. So we signed him up for this horse, and he was happy enough to ride him, so that was good enough for us. And he rode him great.
How huge is the draw for you on Wednesday?
I mean, it's like anything else. You know, you want to draw good. You always want to get out of the gates good in every horse race. You want to get bumped around. So those things are sometimes a little bit uncontrollable. But just want to get a good break and be where you need to be.
Okay. Very good. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Once again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll go next to John Pritchie with Horse Racer Insider.
Good afternoon, Dallas.
Hey, John.
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on your, a great 2017 and the campaign that you managed for the filly. Could you tell us a little bit about what it meant to you personally? I mean, as you look back, I know it's only January and your eyes are focused on Saturday, but if you could look back on 2017 and tell us about some of the emotions you felt at various times of the year.
Well, I was basically with Forever Bridal. Are you talking?
Say again?
Yeah, I thought with Forever
Bridal.
Well,
I guess that was just the whole thing. I mean, you did win the Great One with Seeking the Soul, and, of course, you managed what appears to be an Eclipse Award campaign. So I just meant the whole thing.
Yeah, John, she's a real special horse, and, like I said, she was coming off an injury, and she just got herself really ready, and we ran her at Churchill. It was great. And then she had to go from one race right to hooking a champion at Songbird, and it was a great race. So, that was very solid, and I felt good about going to the Breeders' Cup, spacing her races out, keeping her healthy, and, she just loves to train. So that was, that was one thing that was in my favor, that she loved to train, and her workouts were good. And, as she was winning and developing, this horse started developing, and we picked up a few things on him, like when he ran in the Lucas Classic, Florent Giroux, gave him a basic ride and kind of hit him with a stick a little bit, and I just noticed that he looked like he was slowing down when he was getting hit with the whip. So when Hernandez rode him over at Keeneland, I told him don't hit him with the stick, and he broke the track record. So we think we kind of picked up on something on that, and Johnny rode him, and he did veer a little bit in the stretch, but he has a tendency to do that sometimes. But he got the job done, and it was just a great finish for 17. And both of the horses, the good horses, are healthy, and it was a good 17. Yes, sir.
Thanks for the tip, and have a safe trip on Saturday, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, John.
We have no more questions at this time.
All right, Dallas, one more quick one before we let you go. Forever Unbridled was a possibility for the Pegasus for a while. I'm just curious if you can give us an update on her status.
Yeah, she's doing very well. She's training at she's here at Fairgrounds, and she gallops every day, and we're going to be together down in Florida, and we'll be talking about a campaign for her. So that's the way it's going to go. She's healthy, and she's doing good, and I'm very happy with that.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Well, Dallas, thanks for your time today, and we'll look forward to seeing you Thursday night at the Eclipse Awards.
Thank you. It's going to be a great race and great horses, and glad to be a part of it. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Dallas Stewart, who's going to have Seeking the Soul in the Pegasus on Saturday, and as mentioned before, we'll likely see him on stage at the Eclipse Awards Thursday night. Now, our final guest is a Hall of Fame rider, and he also is a key player in both the Eclipse Awards and the Pegasus. Mike Smith is an Eclipse Awards finalist for Outstanding Jockey, an honor he's won twice before in the early 90s. He had 15 Grade 1 wins in 2017, including the inaugural Pegasus on Arrowgate, and Saturday he'll ride Collected for Bob Baffert. Mike Smith, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Doing great and so happy to have you on, as always. You were on Collected last time in the San Antonio. You never really got into that race. Just wondering if you can tell us about that that effort and what gives you hope for a better performance this Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I mean, going into the race, of course, you know, this first race back from the Breeders' Cup and, you know, wanting to get a good race in him and thinking that, you know, I could probably sit off the pace this time, thinking there was going to be a whole lot more pace in it and what actually developed. You know, we certainly didn't want to have to make that a gutting race. You know, we didn't want to have to go very fast early, and, of course, which he can do, and they have to hold off the closes and go fast late. So the way we felt that it was going to sort of work out was there was going to be a couple of them, though. And during the warm-up, everyone's warming up like they're going to go, so I'm thinking, all right, I'll just leave here real still. So I left the gates real still, and what I didn't know about Collected is you can get him to turn off just as easy as you can get him to turn on. And so he relaxed so quick. And at that point, Castellano, they all three of them left there sitting really good, so I thought it was going to work out. So when they saw me not go, everyone kind of focused on me and just backed right on off and then waited for me. And instead of a 22:46 that I was expecting, we got a 24:49, which after that, at that point, like I said, he turned off so quick, I couldn't move. If I move, it's going to be a four-wide move. I'm going to make it a very taxing race, and I was at the mercy of the pace at that point, just hoping I could, you know, run them down, and they even went slower the second quarter, and then just turned into a sprint for home. Mistake on my part.
Well, there's a lot of speed in this race on Saturday, and I'm just curious to get your opinion on speed when you're talking about, you know, world-class horses like this. You know, it seems like sometimes you can't handicap a race of this caliber the same way because the fast horses might have a little more in them and might not fold as easily as they would. Is there a difference between speed in a Grade 1 race and speed in a Thursday race?
Well, speed in a Grade 1 race stays a lot longer. You know, they could withstand it a little longer. But, again, now you're talking about a full field as to a five-horse field, a four-horse field, where a lot of times, you know, those kind of races are harder to win because everyone knows where everyone's at, and it's just pretty easy to, you know, slow things down or keep someone trapped because there's no other horses in the race. And you have a full field like this, well, you're certainly going to have a more honest pace, a more honest race. And saying that, I'm part of that speed, and I'm certainly going to ride him, you know, a lot different than I did the other day.
Yes, that's been every indication from your trainer as well. Well, Mike, I'm going to see what questions the media has, so I'll ask Vicky, the operator, to check in and see if we have anything in the queue.
Sure.
Again, to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll go first to Ron Flatter with BSIN.
Hey, Mike. Tim Ritvo a few minutes ago suggested that the run-up to the on the start could be pushed back anywhere from 20 to 60 more feet, 60 feet right now, and they could go up to 80 or 100 or 120 or something. And they may or may not do that. How big a deal would that be, especially if you got stuck in an outside draw?
It would certainly help. A little, probably not a whole lot, but it would certainly help a little. You know, depending on again where you drew, if you want them to actually do that or not.
And how bad? Would it be crushing, virtually impossible to win if you get stuck in 10, 11, or 12?
I wouldn't say impossible, but it'd be very difficult. You'd have to have some things work out for you. Either way, rather you're a horse. You'd hope to jump extremely well, take advantage of your break or came from a ways out of it. Hopefully the horse to your inside will outfoot you real quick and you can just drop right on over. So I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's very difficult.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Good luck.
Thank you.
Mike Smith, we are getting a lot of background noise from your line. Can you switch to a handset?
Yeah.
So that we can get some better audio from you.
How's that? Hello?
That is better. Thank you.
You bet.
I'm in the gym working out, so it's a little noisy in here.
Okay, thank you. We'll go next to Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Hey, Mikey, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, in the gym, so does that mean like the 315 is getting put up on the bench press right now for you? Is that why all that noise is in the background?
No, we're too close to race day. I can't get hurt, man. It's just maintenance.
Okay, so why Collected instead of West Coast? Did you have a choice, or was that Baffert's call of which one you was going to be on? What went into that?
You'll have to – that's a question for Bob. It wasn't presented to me on if I had a choice or not. So, I mean, I'm just happy to be on either one of them. And they're both extremely talented. And like I said, just happy to be on one of them.
Oh, exactly. Having familiarity with another one of the primetime contenders in the race, does that help you any at all? Or do you just solely concentrate on the one you're on?
And, you know, just a little everything. I mean, you concentrate on the one you're on. You're hoping to, you know, first of all, get him into a position that you're happy with and that the horse is happy with. And then it's a little of everything, man. I mean, I'm checking out who's in front of me, who's behind me, or if I'm in front, am I going comfortable enough, or whatever the situation may be. I mean, I'm just checking out everything. Once I got my horse in a place that I think he's happy in a comfortable rhythm, now I start watching and looking on how the race is developing and what I think I need to do next.
As the defending champ here, does that give you any kind of advantage since you won it last year, you think?
I mean, I wouldn't say so. You know, those guys, you know, they ride there. The guys that are riding there all the time, I mean, it would probably give them a slight home field advantage maybe, you know, just because they over the course a whole lot more. But, yeah, at this stage, man, when you're on these kind of horses, man, they're so straightforward and so good. I mean, you could run them backwards and they'd figure out how to do it.
Well, I'm sure that they'd need somebody like you to pilot them. But, Mike, fantastic job this year. Wish you the best of luck, man, and hope everything goes well, all right?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
We'll go next to Robert Kickheffer with United Press International.
Hey, Mike. Thinking back to last year and this race and then going over to Dubai, I just wonder if you could give us some thoughts from your own mind about the importance of international racing and what it means to racing in this country to be part of that.
It's incredible. I mean, to get to showcase the talent your horse has on an international level is amazing. I mean, you know, people not only got to see how great Arrowgate was last year here in the United States, but, I mean, everyone all over the country, all over the world watched the World Cup, and what he was able to do that night was just astonishing. I mean, it just proved and showed people how great this horse really was and is.
We still don't really believe that happened. But
well, I don't either, to be honest with you.
You made a little history yourself back in the 90s in Ireland, winning, being the first American jockey to win first American horse to win a European Classic. You've done some international riding, but it hasn't been really a major component of your career. Some thoughts about that?
Yeah, I'd like it to be. I would certainly love to get to Royal Ascot, you know, this year coming and you know, whatever's left in the years of my career. I was blessed enough to get there once to Royal Ascot and actually fared very well for the price that the horse was. I was like 90-1 probably, and he ran third. And I've got maybe some opportunities to go this year. I'm hoping anyway. We'll see how it works out. But I'd love to get the chance to win a few bigger races in Europe.
Well, good luck on Saturday, and we'll see you in Dubai and maybe Royal Ascot.
Sounds great.
We'll go next to Mike Kane with NBC Sports.
Hi, Mike. Could you comment on the difference from last year to this year? Last year you were the hunted. This year you're kind of the hunter. Did you feel a lot of pressure last year, and how are you approaching this year's race?
You know, I approach it much the same. I mean, of course, I'm not going to be favored by no means, but if there's a horse in the race that could turn the table on Gunrunner, I'm certainly on one of them. So, you know, the pressure's probably going to be, I would have to say, more on the Gunrunner team than our team. But in saying that, I mean, I still got to get a lot of things done and done right to even give myself a chance to beat him. So I'm not, it's two different kind of pressures. With Arrowgate, man, I knew how talented he was. It was just, we drew the one hole. You know, he's not known for his speed first jump or two out of the gate, so it was very important to get him out of there. And I think once I was able to do that, a lot of the pressure was off my back, to be honest with you. Now it's just a matter of giving him a trip because I know he's going to run. I mean, he was in the bridle and wanting to do it. And whereas going in this Saturday, I mean, there's some things that we got to see how we draw, first of all, where we're at. You know, hopefully jump extremely well, get out and get into a place that I feel is happy and comfortable for my horse, and then see where everyone's at. You know, I mean, so, you know, they're if anyone tells you they got no pressure in these types of races, especially racing for $16 million, they're lying.
Okay. I know you weren't on Collected in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and we know that Collected went out and engaged Gunrunner and provided the pace pressure. I think he was the only one really there consistently. Do you need to do that, and do other horses need to do that? What is it? I guess the basic question is, what's it going to take to beat Gunrunner here, who clearly is the deserving favorite in this race?
Well, what's so hard to beat Gunrunner is he's not a one-dimensional horse. You know, he's not a horse that needs the lead. He's a horse that if they go quick enough, we've all seen him lay, you know, second, third, fourth, and still run just as well as when he's had a comfortable lead. So, I mean, he's going to be tough to beat. You got to, like I said, I got to fire my A-plus race. A few things got to go, you know, our way, which can happen in horse racing. I feel that my horse is going into this race really good. Although I didn't breeze him yesterday, I breezed him the time before, which was a big breeze. Man, he just worked tremendous. So we're going in at least training the right way, and that's a big plus to have. In saying that, of course, Gunrunner's training up of as good as it can be training as well. So it's going to be a tough race. But there's, you know, 11 other horses besides me and him in there, and they're all talented. And any given day, they could all jump up and run a huge race. So we just got to see how everyone draws and see how the race develops the first 16th, eighth of a mile out of the gate.
One last question. What can you recall the atmosphere here last year at Gulfstream Park? What was it like? You've been at big events all throughout your career. Did this one feel like a big event right from the rip?
It certainly got to be as the day went on. We started realizing that you're racing $12 million, the richest race in the world, and you could just feel it get thick. The air just kind of, you know, say, wow, you know, I mean, this is pretty neat. I think you're going to even see a more of a big race feel to it this year, man. It's going to be incredible. I mean, I already got goosebumps just saying it.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
And we'll go next to John Pritchie with Horse Race and Trade Insider.
Hey, Mike. If we could ask you to put on your handicapping hat, and let's assume a clean break for all, and let's assume that, say, you and Sharp Azteca and Gunrunner draw mid-gate, so and we got a fair break into the first turn. Who do you think is 1-2-3 going into the backstretch? And if you find yourself perhaps just off of a Gunrunner, would you kind of try to stay on his hip and move when he does?
Depending on the fractions of the race, you know, there's so much that goes into that. You know, I won't know that, to be honest with you, until if we're in that situation. It's just a feel, man. Am I already doing too much? You know, am I feel like I have my foot on the accelerator a little too much? Is it, you know, is this going to compromise my chances? Is he doing something that's going too easy? Is someone else putting the pressure on him where I think, all right, he's pushing him just enough. I can go ahead and just cruise right here and then see if I'm good enough to run by him, hold off the closers. I mean, there's just so many things that happen, and you don't know that until you you're actually in that situation, and you can feel it. I mean, you can feel when you're asking your horse for a bit too much too early, and you can feel when someone's getting away with something too early. So it just all depends. And to be honest with you, we're all three capable of being on the lead. We all three have, right, you know, the same, that kind of speed. I know collectively, if he jumps well, he's quick. I mean, he can be really quick. I got him to turn off really easy the other day, really fast. But, I mean, he listens to your commands. So if he would have listened to me asking to go, I mean, he'd have been in front.
Well, okay, good enough. Do you assume that maybe Sharp Azteca is going to lead, that he may be the fastest one of you guys early on?
Again, Sharp Azteca he's not a need-to-lead type of horse. This horse actually runs well sitting off the pace, right off the pace. But he has been running in sprints. So you would say he's coming out of quicker races, mm-hmm, even as far as the first quarter goes. But I guarantee if you were gearing Gun Runner up for sprints or Collected up, they'd be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes it really challenging, is what's going to make it so fun. Is, man, there's some really good horses in it this year with super horses in it this year with kind of the same kind of tactics. So it's going to be a very tactical race.
Can't wait to see it. Have a safe trip on Saturday, Mike.
Thank you.
And we have no more questions at this time.
All right, Mike,
you.
One last one from me. Oh, you got to run?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, understanding that you're not impartial in what I'm about to ask you, I'm still curious. You know, Gunrunner is expected to be named the Horse of the Year on Thursday, but back in March, we all agreed that Arrogate was an all-time great. So I'd just like to get your opinion on the Horse of the Year vote and whether maybe it should be closer than everyone's expecting it to be.
Well, Gunrunner came back and was unbeaten. You know, so he certainly, I mean, as far as Horse of the Year goes, he certainly deserves it. It was just too bad for us that our last, you know, few races were at Del Mar, a track that he just didn't care for at all. I mean, I don't even think we saw even 70% of him on those occasions. I know in my heart of hearts that as far as when he would run his A race, I just didn't think there was anyone in the world could beat him as far as Arrogate goes. But coming back from Dubai, man, I mean, Gunrunner took it up a notch, man, and you can't take that away from him.
Very good. Well, thanks for that opinion, Mike, and thanks for all the thoughts today. We'll look forward to seeing you in Florida in a few days.
Sounds wonderful, man. Can't wait to see you guys. Thank you.
All right. Mike Smith, the Hall of Fame jockey, interrupting his workout very kindly to take some questions from the media. That'll do it for this teleconference. Once again, thanks to Steve and Tim and Dallas and Mike. And if there's anything we can do to help with your coverage of the Eclipse Awards or the Pegasus, please contact myself or Joan Lawrence, and we'll do everything we can for you. Thanks so much, and I'll send it back to Vicki.
That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.
Okay.